Oh, I did contact Michael. He's alive.
Oh, good.
I contacted him through his wife. Yeah, that was how I found him.
Oh, good. I'm glad that he's around.
Yeah.
All right, so, welcome. Don't forget. We're going to be a little self-assessment in class.
Thank you, Luz.
That's all right.
How's Jack?
It's all right.
How's that? Is that a reasonable volume?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, so we're going to do a self-assessment in class right after we meditate, so we'll get that set up. I'll talk about it in a couple minutes. But first, I wanted to mention that this is the last class of this term, and that we begin again on January 27th, when City College begins again. We go for 10 weeks. It takes us to April 14th. And we'll be the same time in the classroom. Won't forget to sign in. you'll need to re-register for the class, but you don't need to, because you're City College students, it should be a lot easier. I think you just find the class and register for it. You don't have to register at City College, because you're already registered at City College. So the class is still called Consciousness, Science, and the Nature of Being. And if CRN is 68463. 68463. Again, 68463 is the CRN. And I think I sent that to you in an email yesterday also. And I'll send another email out a couple of weeks prior, probably a week. A couple weeks prior to when that class starts. Okay. All right. Any questions or comments before we start? Jackie?
I was wondering if we can spend some time on a vibration and energy related to the
class. You and I should talk about that. You might be the one that presents that.
Yes.
Okay, because that could happen. That could happen, Jackie. Okay, so why don't we talk about it, okay?
Okay.
All right. Any other questions or comments? All right, then I think what we need to do is set this activity up so that once we meditate, we can go right into the activity. So you will need a writing surface and writing material, but you don't need a piece of paper because I'm going to give it to you. So you just need something solid to write on. Hang on. Everybody gets one of these. So we need, we got one. Thank you, Leon. Thank you, Kevin. Okay, so for those of you who know what this is, the version that we're going to do is appreciably enhanced because of stuff which I'll tell you. Okay, but not right now. It's not the same thing. It's the same process, but it's not the same questions, and it's not the same assessment. All right, so you just need to hold that. I'm going to talk to you about what to do about that right after we meditate. I thought a bunch about what I wanted to tell you before we sat today, and I'm not sure it's all going to cohere, but let's just start. First thing that I wanted to tell you was about thinking. And this is something that you know, but that I constantly am reminding people. It's the kind of most frequent error that people make, even people that should know better, like all of us. So when you look at thinking from the point of view of brain science, the brain, in my view, and I think fairly general view, does three things. It has three functions. One function is it regulates the body, what's going on inside the body. It takes information from various places in the body, and it gives orders to various places in the body, so that the body stays in a homeostatic state, in a state of homeostasis, of functioning well. So that's the first thing the brain does. It puts a lot of, takes a lot of processing power to monitor the body and regulate the body. So function one of the brain. Function two of the brain is it allows us to navigate the world. It takes in information from the senses, and then coordinates the body so that the body can move through the world to approach opportunity or avoid threat. So the second function of the brain is it allows us to navigate the external environment. First function, regulate the internal environment. Second function, navigate the external environment. The third function of the brain is a function that we only find well-developed in human beings. We find it in some other various other animals at various levels, but only in human beings is this really profoundly developed. And that is, the brain makes models of the world. Or sometimes you could call it maps, but I like the term models better. So the brain is constantly trying to figure out the world, making ideas, models of the world, such that you can choose the best course of action when you're moving forward. So you remember what happened in situations from the past, and then you think in your mind, what would be the best way to go forward based on what I know? So the brain is a model-making machine and a prediction machine. It's always trying to predict what will happen next and what would be the best way to move through what will happen. And that's mostly what we call thinking. If you look at your thought process, it's mostly about how have I done? How am I doing? How should I do? It's all about making models. Now, mostly this works really well. It's functional. That's why it evolved. We have a cerebral cortex. We have the prefrontal cortex for a good reason, because it has helped us to survive and procreate. But sometimes the model making is inaccurate. Sometimes you don't make accurate models. They're not well conceived, or sometimes the models worked well in the past, but the current situation is different than the past, and that's not included in the model. So sometimes your thought process doesn't work as it should. It's not giving you good information. So the main problem that people have is they uncritically believe their thoughts. They're not mindful of their thoughts. Thoughts are just who they are in their head, and they act on those thoughts. Most of the time that's okay, some of the time it's really not okay. You can think yourself into anxiety and depression pretty effectively, for example. And one of the treatments for anxiety and depression is to change the way that you think. So from a mindful point of view, thinking is something that your brain is doing, and you
notice that process, but you don't necessarily believe that process. Sometimes it's work, sometimes it's accurate, sometimes it's not accurate. So you have a critical attitude towards your own thought process. It's not you. It's something the brain is doing. It's just like, sometimes my stomach is digesting well and sometimes it's not digesting well. Mostly it digests well. But when it isn't digesting well, it does. It's just my stomach misbehaving. Well, sometimes your brain misbehaves. Or sometimes your thought process misbehaves. So you need to have a critical attitude towards your own thought process. Not believe that it is always going to lead you in the right direction. So I guess that leads me to the second thought that I have about mindfulness, which is one way to look at mindfulness is it's opening up to what is. Opening up to what is. You're just opening up your awareness of sensations, emotions, thoughts, and you're just allowing everything to emerge into your consciousness as it currently exists. So that you can look at it. So that you can assess whether it's what it's doing and whether it's helpful or not.
Well, Robert. What's the most common mistake that people make?
Say again?
You said that you're going to tell us what's the most common mistake that people make.
The most common mistake people make is to believe their thoughts.
Oh.
Critically. You know, they think the thoughts are true, they're me, you know, as opposed to their one function of the brain that it sometimes works well and sometimes doesn't work so well. So mindfulness can be looked at as opening up to what is. And at least at this time, not trying to change anything. That's the hard part. Our tendency is always to get rid of what's bad and to make more of what's good. That's what Buddhists call grasping, right? That's the tendency to operate on our experience. In mindfulness, you don't operate on your experience. You become more aware of it. And at the moment, more accepting of it. Not that you accept it forever, that's a thought. But at this moment, what is, and you can either deny it or wrestle with it, or you can simply be okay with what is. I can't remember the guy that was one of Jack Kornfield's teachers, but Jack, early on, when he was learning mindfulness and Buddhism, said to his teacher, "How do you help people change?" And his teacher said, "I don't do that. I help them be with what is." So, let's take 10 minutes and be with what is, and then we'll talk about what is and how to change it. Because I'm starting with Buddhism, I'm going to end with Western psychology here. But a question or two. It was, let's see. So first, Catherine, yell out.
Can you turn the audio down when we meditate
because
it's coming?
Okay. How's that? Can you hear that still?
No, there must be a fault.
Oh, it's there. Yeah, okay. So, can you turn that back?
You probably set the turn off.
So, how's that? Is that okay? How's that volume? Oh, it's there. Okay. So, how is it? I'll try not to yell. How's the volume? Is it okay? Right. And there was another question. Abraham.
Yeah, does the brain generate thoughts or receive thoughts?
Does the brain generate or receive? Okay.
That's the answer question you're asking, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a very profound question. From conventional neuroscience's point of view, the brain generates the thoughts. The brain makes the thoughts. The function of the brain is to make thoughts, or one function of the brain is to make thoughts. From the spiritual point of view, the brain makes some thoughts and receives other thoughts. That is, the brain is a transducer rather than a producer. It takes stuff from the ether, from out there, and it filters it through your own consciousness so that the thoughts become your thoughts, but the genesis of the thoughts is not your brain, it's something larger than your brain. And the question is whether all thoughts are like that or some thoughts are like that. And Carl Jung said there are two kinds of dreams. There are small dreams and great dreams. Great dreams come from beyond you. Small dreams come from inside you. So it's a complicated question, but from neuroscience's point of view, the brain makes thoughts. All right, so let's sit, shall we? Oh. And then after we sit, you're going to stay in a somewhat meditative state. I guess I should tell you this. Okay. You're going to stay in a somewhat meditative state because I'm going to ask you a series of questions. And for each question, you're going to operate on, or you're going to mark one of those circles. So I'll show you, I'm going to put up on the screen how to do this, a graphic of it. But if you stay in a meditative state, then you can hear the question, the answer will come to you, you'll indicate it on one of those circles, and then you go back into meditation. So you're going to be going out of meditation into answering a question, and then back to meditation. So we're going to kind of be going this way and that way. Back to and every time you come back to a meditative state, just let go of what happened before, and just be in the moment, and then the next question will come up, and then you can operate again on the particular circle that I'm going to tell you to operate on. Okay? So we'll meditate, and then I'll explain how to do this, and we'll just proceed right into it. So I will ring the bell in 10 minutes, and we will do our little chakra drill. Self-assessment and a fairly profound one, and so this is for your eyes only, unless you wish to share with others. Okay, that's not what I wanted to see, but let's try this. If the answer is yes, where you are fully open in that way, you leave the circle entirely uncolored in. To the extent that the answer is no, or you're not fully open or realized in that way, you color in the circle. So here's an example.
No, no, you said the same thing twice.
You don't write in the circle, you just color it in?
No, I'll show you.
Okay.
If the answer is yes, and you're completely open in that way, you leave the circle entirely uncolored. You just leave it alone. To the extent that the answer is no, or you're not entirely open or realized in that way, you color in the circle. So the top circle, that's like about 80% open, 20% closed. See, I colored it in 20%. For the bottom circle, just to show you, that's about 70% closed, about 30% open. I colored it in about 70%. Does that make sense to people? You know how to do that? Okay. So when there are more than one question, it might be that you're yes for one of the questions and no for the other of the questions. So you have to balance those out to decide how much of the circle to color in. Now don't think too hard about this. Intuitively, the answers will come to you. You'll listen to the question or questions and you'll know how much of the circle to color in. Now, be honest with yourself. When I've done this, something similar to this with a bunch of very high-placed business people, they didn't color in anything. Because they didn't want to admit to anybody else or themselves that they weren't perfect, you know. But you and I know that there's work to be done here. Okay. So this is good information from you. It will all be in the service of your growth and enlightenment. So let's start, shall we? And the idea is you put yourself in a meditative frame of mind. And then you hear the circle, you hear the question or several questions, and then you let an answer come intuitively, color in the circle to the extent that you are not fully open in that way, or the answer is no, and then go back to being present at the moment. So you're going to go from meditation to coloring in a circle, back to meditation, then we're going to go up to the second circle until we go up all seven circles. Any questions? Yeah.
Do you have the list of the questions?
Oh, okay. You don't have to write down the questions because I'm going to give you another sheet of paper after we do this with everything on it. Okay? So you just need to pay attention to the question. Now, each question or questions, for each circle, I'm going to put the question up there as well as read it. Okay, so here we go. No, we don't go here until, hang on, I got to get it to my own. Circle. How well am I taking care of myself physically and financially? And how safe and nurturing is what's around me? So if you are taking care of yourself physically and financially entirely well, and you are completely safe and nurtured by what's around you, then, you know, in your immediate neighborhood and in the world, you leave the circle entirely uncolored. If you're not entirely taking care of yourself well physically and or financially, and you're not entirely safe and nurtured by what's around you, then you color in the circle to some extent. Okay, do that now and then go back to being meditative.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
So what if half of that, the first question is, say, a yes, and the second question is a half yes?
Then if the first question is entirely yes and the second question is half yes, then you color in the circle about 25%.
Okay, all right, yeah. Sorry.
I could put the percentage open to the left of the circle. Some people like to do that. I like to put the percentage open. Just put the percentage open to the left of the circle, if you want. Okay, and then come back to sitting in meditation for a moment, and then we'll go to the second circle up. So let go of any activation in your system, and just come back to just being calm, right in the present. That way, the answer to each circle can come intuitively from a calm, peaceful, clear place. Okay, the second circle, up from the bottom, the question is, how much am I enjoying life? How much am I enjoying life? If you're enjoying life entirely, then you you leave it open entirely. If you're not enjoying life at all, you color it in totally. Third circle. Two questions for the third circle up. To what degree am I able to get what I need? To what degree am I able to get what I need? And to what extent am I realizing my potential? To what extent am I realizing my potential? And you balance the answer to both of those for the circle, for how much you cover in the circle. thought process between these circles, and you just come back to sitting completely present and open. Middle circle, so the fourth circle up. Three questions. How fully do I feel my feelings? How fully do I feel my feelings? How completely am I into what I'm doing? How completely am I into what I'm doing? And how strong are my relationships? How strong are my relationships? So, how fully do you feel your feelings? How completely are you into whatever it is that you're doing in your life? And how strong are your relationships? Blend all those three together to the answer to the how much you color in the circle. The fifth circle up. Two questions. How freely do I express myself? How freely do I express myself? And how actively am I sharing my vision and my gifts? How actively am I sharing my vision and my gifts? Thank you. The sixth circle, the next to the top circle. How open and curious is my mind? How open and curious is my mind? How much does my thinking energize and expand me? How much does my thinking energize and expand me? Top circle. How completely do I identify with something greater, that is, larger than myself? That can be vertical, some spiritual dimension, or it can be horizontal, some cause on this plane. But how completely do I identify myself with something greater than myself, either spiritually or secularly? and come back to center for a moment. One point you can answer that. Come back to meditation for just one more moment. So what you have just done is an assessment of how well you are functioning to this point in your life, and a map of where growth needs to take place. An assessment of how you are doing in terms of your own well-being at this point, and a map of where to go next in terms of growing more completely. I made this up a long time ago, and I've been modifying it, refining it ever since. It's based on, when I looked at various theories of well-being, that is how we're doing in life, there's a bunch of them around, but this one, I think, is more comprehensive, covers all the levels of who we are better than any other formulation. And the formulation that I'm talking about is not a Western psychological formulation, all of which seem to be partial understandings. This is, as some of you know, a formulation based on the Hindu chakra system, which is thousands of years old in its very undeveloped form, but only in the 20th century has the chakra system become more fully developed. As East has met West, as most of the work on the chakra system has happened because of Western people thinking about this basic Eastern system. I guess I'm one of those people, because those of you who know a lot about the chakra system, I'm modifying the chakra system to suit Western people and Western psychology. So some of this will be familiar to you, some of what I'm going to show you might be not entirely familiar to you. So I ask for your forgiveness as I deviate from chapter and verse about the chakra system, which, as I said, is a very, it's something that has been evolved rapidly and recently. So having said all that, we need to understand what it is that we just did with each of these circles, what those circles really mean, and why those questions are there, and what to do about the fact that we have work to be done in each of these areas. Okay? So I will give you another sheet of paper. We need to add just one thing to it, because I added one question after I printed up these sheets. And so this will give you the information that we've covered and the information we're about to cover.
Thank you.
another question for the bottom circle. There's only one question on your sheet, the bottom circle. You'll actually need to add the second question. How safe and nurturing is what's around me? Safe and nurturing is what's around me. Aspects of our lives. So the project, from the point of view of the chakra system, and from the point of view of the Hindus and the Buddhists and Western positive psychologists, is to become more alive. If we have difficulties, those difficulties are not seen as, they're seen as stopping points or restrictions for a growth process. And the idea is to open up those restrictions so that growth can happen naturally. So a metaphor that I use for this process is equating these seven areas with a flowering fruit tree, like an apple tree or an orange tree or a lemon tree. This is probably true for almost all plants, but it's easiest to visualize it for some kind of fruit tree. So when we look at a fruit tree, when the seed of a fruit tree goes into the earth, the fruit actually goes into the earth with the seed, what's the very first thing that new life has to do? Has to put down a root. It's the very first thing that happens. So the first chakra, the first area of energy, of activation in us, of life energy in us, is called the root chakra. The Hindus call it that too, the root chakra. So the question is, are we gaining life energy from our environment such that we can grow? So the two the aspects of our functioning that usually this is talked about as being at the base of the spine, but I include the lower body here. And the aspects we're talking about are health and safety. That is, in order for that seed to grow, that seed needs to be in a healthy environment and to be safe. In terms of ourselves, in order to thrive as people, we need to be healthy, and we also need to be to be safe, so that we can venture out into the world. So this also has to do with vitality, how much life energy there is in us. Security, how secure we feel about being alive. How stable we feel as opposed to being unstable. And really this is about basic trust. Some of you know about basic trust. We've talked about it some. I'll probably talk about it a whole bunch this spring. The idea is some people are born into the world with a basic mistrust, and it kind of undermines or gives them an underlying anxiety no matter what happens in life. Other people are born into the world with basic trust. No matter what happens, they feel basically okay. If you're not, if you weren't 100% open in this way, join the club, the good news is it is possible to become more secure, to feel more safe, to feel more vital, to feel more alive, even if you have physical difficulties, to feel basically more alive in your soul. So it is possible to open up in these areas. It's just not so easy because these are so basic. There are various therapies that talk about how to open the root chakra up, but from the point of view, which we'll talk about probably in the spring, but from the point of view of a plant, when a plant is not doing well at all, and you try to water it and fertilize it, and it still doesn't do well, what do you do with the plant? You transplant it. You take it to some other environment where it might be better. Some people who have really bad root chakra problems, they need to be transplanted. They need to change their social environment, sometimes their physical environment, but certainly their social environment. So sometimes you need to take a person out of a social environment which is causing them to feel insecure about being alive, and bring them into an environment surrounded by people who are secure in being alive. And that can make a huge difference. At any age, because we absorb what's around us. All right, let's continue. These are huge questions that we're looking at, but I need to go up the chakras at least a little bit, you know, while we're here. So, Robert.
Well, I just wanted to say, I have this column in Montecito Journal called Robert's Big Question.
Yes.
And the column, the article that just came out yesterday on the newsstands right now is about trust in society. And it turns out the best indication for wealth and prosperity and thriving of society is trust within the society.
Yeah, that's what the World Happiness Report shows. The societies which have basic trust, they thrive. What he's saying is it's basic, and it is. It's at the root chakra. If you don't have basic trust, it's like the life energy gets blocked at that area, and it can't move into these other, it can't move up. The Hindus say that it can't move out of the first chakra, and it can't really move up the spine, lighting up each chakra in turns. What's supposed to happen is you're supposed to be a fountain. Life energy is supposed to come into you from everywhere, it's supposed to move up your spine and out the top of your head like a fountain, and out every area in between fully. So you're illuminated all the way up and out. But the basis of it is trust. And if you don't have that trust in being alive, if you haven't said yes fully to being alive, then you're crimping everything else that is supported. The seed that doesn't put down a good enough root can't grow. Let's keep going up, okay? So, the second level up, I should call these centers of life energy because I'm adapting them so much. The second chakra, it's at the level of the genitals, and what people usually understand this to mean is sexual energy, but it's much larger than that. When we look at the seed, again, this is the way to most clearly visualize it. When we look at that seed that put down a root, what's the next thing the seed has to do to grow? It has to set up a shoot, right? It has to start moving up toward the light. So the second chakra is about enthusiasm, wanting to grow, pleasure. Why? Pleasure, we'll get there in a minute, and approach and avoidance. The sexuality emphasis on the second chakra is just one possible pleasure. The question is more generally, how much pleasure does one experience? And the reason that's important, the reason pleasure is so central, is because we're wired to enjoy, to feel pleasurable, that which increases our life. And to feel displeasure about that which decreases our life. So pleasure in nature is a perfect indicator of whether you're growing or whether you're not growing. So it's wired into animals' brains to do more of that which is pleasurable because that is life promoting, and to do less of that which is displeasurable because that is life denying. Now only human beings have perverted this. That is, we have cooked up in laboratories and other places pleasures which are not good for you. Okay, so we get a lot of people get addicted to things that supposedly give them pleasure but don't increase their life. But that's a human phenomenon. In nature, pleasure indicates life enrichment. So if you don't have any, if you're anhedonic, if you don't have any pleasure in your life, it shows that you're not approaching opportunity. And you need to do that to grow. If all you have is displeasure, it means that you're simply avoiding threat. If you don't have any feeling at all, it means you can't go toward what's good for you, and you can't go away from what's bad for you. And there are people that are so broken down, they have no feeling at all. So, the second chapter, that your answer to that second area shows how to what extent you are approaching opportunity. What extent you are going toward that which increases your life. So the prescription here is really simple. Except for addictive things, do what more of what gives you pleasure. Make sure that you have pleasure in your life. It is not okay to have a life where you're making a lot of money and, you know, have a lot of influence and you don't have a good time. That's not a life. That will ultimately not lead you in viable, healthy directions. And unfortunately, many people live that way. They live for accomplishment, and they're never happy. All right, so that's the second area. So now Carl.
Yeah, I think you have to balance that with the active avoidance of negative influences, negative factors around you.
Oh, absolutely. You need to be able to both approach and avoid. So you need to feel displeasure when things are inevitable, when you need to get away from stuff. You need to not just let yourself be victimized. So yeah, you need to have pleasure. You need to be able to feel the various gradations of pleasure, from displeasure to ecstasy. Richard.
I find the word joy resonates more with me than pleasure. I don't know what it is, but...
Okay. That's a friendly... enjoyment versus unenjoyment? Or
no, it's joy. Just the word.
Okay, so I think joy is an overtone. I think joy is the high end of this, but it hooks to the seventh chakra. So let's keep going. So this one, I'm going to read the questions again. So this one is, to what degree am I able to get what I need? And to what extent am I realizing my potential? Right? It's on the other side. To what degree am I able to get what I need? To what extent am I realizing my potential? Actually, Richard, for the second question, my question was, how much am I enjoying life? So I actually used the term joy.
Yeah.
All right, so the third area, located supposedly, what the Hindus say is these life energy areas aren't really in the physical body, they're in the patterning energy body, but this is where in the physical body it most corresponds to these energetic levels. Okay? So this is the area of the gut and solar plexus, and it has to do with a sense of self. When we look at that that tree that we're looking at, it has a root, it has a shoot, and now that shoot has to grow larger. It has to grow strong enough to be able to support the structures that are going to be above it. So that shoot has to become a stem and then a trunk. So this is the development of the self. Bernie?
Yeah. To what extent am I realizing my potential is kind of the same question. I don't know if I...
No, I'm getting there. Hang on. I'm getting there. Okay. Okay. So this is about the self. Okay. And I divide the self into four areas: identity, autonomy, ability, and accomplishment. That is, do you know who you are and what your needs are? Autonomy, are you free to get your needs met? Ability, do you have the capability of getting your needs met? And accomplishment, have you gotten your needs met? So these are all about basic life needs that you need to have a sense of who you are in order to fulfill. So this has to do with growing as a person. It has to do with will. It has to do with a capacity to get what you need in life. Now, why did I put to what extent am I able to realize to what extent am I realizing my potential? So the first question was, to what extent am I able to get what I need? And what I'm saying is you need to have a strong sense of self in order to be able to do that. But the second question is, to what extent am I realizing my potential? That's because these areas
have a basic level and then they have a higher level. So the first area, I didn't really say about this, but the first area is, let's just stay with the third area for now. I don't want to complicate things too much. To what extent do I really have my potential? This is the self-developed most fully. So you can have a basic sense of self that's doing all right, but you haven't really grown into who you could become. You haven't become self-actualizing. You simply become okay as you without realizing or without developing this greater capacity in yourself. So that's why I included this. Because for mature people, it's not only about doing okay in the world, it's about being the fullest human being you could be and giving, developing yourself to the highest level you can develop yourself. It's about becoming self-actualizing, right? Not just about becoming viable. So as we go up these areas, I'm going to be looking also at the overtone, the higher level of it, which is, those of you who've done this before, this is new to the way we're looking at it, because this is for mature people. Okay, so now we got a seed, which put down a root, put up a shoot. The shoot became a stem and a trunk. Now we can broaden. Now the limbs can come out, right? Now we can widen ourselves. So this is the, in terms of the flowering tree, this is when the boughs come. The arms of the tree come out from the trunk. So I include, usually the fourth chakra is talked about as being the heart. I include the arms. You will notice, if you pay attention to your body, that your arms are about at the same level as your heart. There must be some relation there. It's because the heart has to do with feeling, and thereby vibrating in the same way as other people, empathizing with other people, feeling what they're feeling. You connect to other people through feeling, essentially. And you also touch the world, interact with the world through your arms. So it's the same process. It's a process of going out from you to others, to the world. So this is about emotion, how fully you can feel, engagement, how fully you are into what you're doing. That was that second question. I'll come back to questions in a minute. And connection, how connected you are to what's beyond you. So the questions were, how fully do I feel? Some of us have a lot of blocked feeling. Certain feelings we can't feel. It turns out, unfortunately, that feeling is kind of, it's not like a whole lot of different switches. It's kind of like the switches are all connected to one switch. So if you turn down the switch for anger, you also don't turn down the switch for joy. You have to be able to feel all of them to feel any of them fully. And if you look at depressed people really have, they have no feeling. It's kind of like all turned down. It's beyond, depression is deeper than sadness. Sadness is still a feeling. Depression is the lack thereof. It's gone deep below that. So, how fully do I feel? How do I feel all my feelings? That's all the feelings. You're not selective about it. You feel them all. How completely am I into what I'm doing? That is, how engaged am I? How much do I go out beyond myself into the world, as opposed to staying stuck in myself? And then, how good are my relationships? How connected am I? So it's all this, the arms coming out, the broadening of the self, the interacting of the self with the beyond self. The boughs, the arms, in terms of the tree. All right, let's keep going. So now we're up to the fifth chakra, which is usually talked about as being the level of the throat. But I include the mouth and the lungs, this whole area.
And this has to do with interchange with the world. It's how you let yourself out by talking. It's how you take in food and take in air and breathe out air. It's how the world comes into and out of you. So this is how you show yourself to the world. It's how you express yourself to the world. So in terms of our tree metaphor, this is the flowering. If you don't allow yourself to flower, if you don't express yourself fully and creatively, then you if you don't flower, the world won't pollinate you. If there's no flower, there's no pollination. Okay, so it's necessary to grow further, to really let yourself be seen. A lot of us have trouble this way. You hear it in people's voices. People's voices are like, you know, they like choke themselves. You can hear that in a lot of people's voices. Is they've learned you can't really let yourself out. And unfortunately, that's hard on your breathing as well as your throat. So this is about communication. And remember the questions? How freely do I express myself? Some people, their tongues are tied. They're afraid that they're going to say something wrong. And so they stifle their self-expression. And they don't flower. The world doesn't see them. They don't come out into the world. Unfortunately, there's more and more of that I find in my students. They won't talk. They're terrified that they'll be a fool, that people will laugh at them. And so they're locked up in this area, which is where students should be entirely open. That's crazy, Professor Sherman. You're right. I don't hear that anymore. I don't hear anything. Do you guys talk? We've got to edit that. All right, so how freely do I express myself? How actively, this is the overtone of this, how actively am I sharing my vision and my gifts? How actively am I sharing my vision and my gifts? So your job as a developed human being is not only to be honest in your and full in your expression, but also to bring out that, the wisdom and the wonder that are inside you, that you have developed, give that to the world. If you're not doing that, you're not really doing a mature, full job. You're not helping the world by showing the world what you have understood. So a lot of us, we're not freely sharing our vision and our gifts. We feel like we don't have anything to share. Our gifts aren't worthy. We have all these crazy messages that we've learned, you know, that we don't matter. The way we look at things doesn't matter. I think that being creative in some way on a pretty much daily basis, I think is necessary for real self-development. I think that if you're not creative, you're not sharing, you're not expressing to the world your unique experience in life. And I think that people that find, sometimes at quite an advanced age, find a way of being creative, it suddenly makes their life make sense more. It's like an axis that their life can rotate around that wasn't there before. And I think that's why adult ed classes that are the art classes and, you know, various kinds of art classes do so well. Because people realize, you know, this is something that I should have been doing from day zero. And when I find it, it makes sense to me. It creates an axis for my life. So if you're not being creative, I think you want to think of what it was. Think of what you, even though you know you could never do it because you're not talented in this way, blah, blah, blah. I think you need to take the step to go, why don't I try that class in sculpture? You know? Why don't I try throwing a pot? Or why don't I try that music class? You may be very surprised about what it does for your life. Okay, so that's the fifth area. So
sixth area. Usually this is talked about as being the forehead, the third eye, but I include the brain, the ears, and the eyes. And, we got to do the flowering plant. Okay, so once the plant has flowered, then it can be pollinated, and then the fruit can develop. So this is the fruition of an individual human being. This level of mind is really the fruition of the individuality. So it has to do, in my view, with four things. With learning, with being, the questions were, how open and curious is my mind? That is, how much I want to keep learning? If you look at the research on aging, one of the things that's always mentioned is people who never stop learning are the people that age best. So the question is, how much do you still want to know about stuff? Or have you thought to yourself, well, I'm not smart enough. I can't learn that stuff. And unfortunately, school teaches most people that they're not smart enough. That's what the grade system is all about. You get out of school and you realize you're dumb. Because you're not as smart as the people that are as smart as, and that's a terrible crime. That's a whole other lecture, but we'll get there. So the question is, is your mind open and curious? You want to know, how do they do that? How does that work? Or what about that? That's what causes you to, that's what your fruition is. That's what causes you to keep growing in that way. Understanding. Deeper than learning is putting it all together. Seeing what underlies all those individual facts and understandings. That's understanding. Okay. The deeper, the seeing the deeper level, or the deeper connection of all the stuff. It's kind of like the metaphor, the example I've used in various writings I've done is there are some people that know all the different theories of psychology. There are some psychologists or counselors that have studied all the different theories of psychology, and they can tell you all the different theories, but they're not good yet because they haven't understood where all those theories come from. There are just a few basic facts about being a human being that generate all these different theories. There's an underlying unity to all this diversity, and unless you understand that unity, you really can't be an effective therapist. And so understanding is another part of this development. Then intuition. This mysterious thing. I don't know that I understand intuition fully, but in my mind, intuition is unconscious pattern recognition. That is, at some level that you're not consciously aware of, you see a pattern that is clear to you, and then it moves from your from your right hemisphere to your left hemisphere. You go, oh, I don't feel good about that, or oh, I feel really good about that. Why? Because there's something that's been going on in your brain that has matched what's going on with understandings from before and seeing the same pattern. And that recognition is intuition. But anyway, that's theoretical. Sorry, I went there. But intuition is clearly part of this. And people that have that developed capacity, they do better than people that don't. They have this feeling of yeah or no, and there's just a gut feeling. And that gut feeling, I think, comes from deeper levels of the brain than you're usually conscious of. And then wisdom. That's the deepest level of this mind, is real wisdom, whatever that is. And then the second question I ask here is, how much does my thinking energize and expand me? How much does my thinking energize and expand me? A lot of us, our thoughts are pretty negative. All about what's wrong or our worries. And so those thoughts don't energize us. Those thoughts do the opposite, right? Those thoughts kind of depress us. We're constantly worried about this or that or the other thing. And, of course, the media and the social environment right now exacerbate that. They're constantly putting thoughts in our head about what's wrong. And so our thoughts aren't energizing us. We wish we weren't thinking. Why can't I stop thinking? Because everything I think about is a bummer, you know? So that's not the best use of this area. And then expand me. Does your thought process make you a larger human being? Ideally, you can become many other people. Your life can go beyond yourself because when you think, you can take on the perspective of others. You read a book and you take on the perspective of the characters in the book, right? You watch a movie and you take on the life experience of the people in the movie. So your thought process is a way of making you much larger because you incorporate all these different ways of looking. Does that make sense to people? I mean, I think it's really important. I'm not expressing it as best as I would like. But I think that's the greatest gift of thinking is it makes you more than you because you take on the perspective of all the people that you read about what they've written or you listen to them and you see things through their eyes. And so you become a larger and larger and larger and larger and larger being. And that makes you wise. So that's the sixth area. So now we've got the fruit. But what happens to the tree after the fruit has fruited? Well, the fruit falls off the tree, right? So the seventh area is the area of life going beyond yourself. It's the area of going out from me to something larger. So the question I asked was, how completely do I identify with something greater? If you stay in me, that you are a separate individual, then life's a tragedy, ultimately, because what's going to happen to that separate individual? It's not going to be there. But if you grow to identify with something beyond yourself, then life is a comedy, because you leave a restricted existence into a larger identity. And some people do that vertically. They identify with something spiritual. When they die, they're going to go to spirit somehow or something larger. And some people identify with something secular, that is, some cause in the world that they're dedicated to, or their family, or their social group. The way I like to look at this, and the way that I talk to people about this, I've said this before to some of you, is we're like leaves on a tree, each of us. If we identify with our leafiness, then autumn is going to come, we're going to shrivel, winter is going to come, we're going to die. Okay? So, end of story, tragedy. But if we take a step back from the leafness, we see that the life isn't fundamentally in the leaf. The life is fundamentally in the tree. The leaf is just one part of that larger life. So our individual life, we're really not individual. We're really part of a larger life project. And individually, we're going to fall apart, but those atoms are going to go back into life. And fundamentally, it's a fundamental illusion that we're a separate being. And so many spiritual teachers have talked about this, right? That you think that you're separate until you realize that you're just one part of the same thing. Richard?
So staying with your metaphor, you'd be the top where the fruit goes to nurturing other people, or the fruit falls off the tree and creates more new life.
That's it. That's it. That's the metaphor. Yeah. Yeah. You can't get more new life unless you fall off the tree. You gotta grow beyond yourself in order to be part of the larger life project. So in terms of the patterns here, a lot of us have trouble with this last area. That we're pretty open into this last area. I see that a bunch. So the prescription for that would be to start thinking about yourself in a little different terms. Like, instead of thinking about how separate you are, think about how connected you are, or how interconnected you are, and how much you are influenced by and influence everything around you. And even how the fact that you breathe in and breathe out other people all the time. I don't know the statistics. I'm not sure how to say this. It has been said by credible people that every time you breathe in molecules that were breathed in by every other living creature that ever lived. And in your body, some of those things get incorporated. You have inside you atoms that have been in pretty much everything that has ever lived. Okay, that's how many atoms are. I actually have Googled this a lot. Different people have very different opinions about it, but it's pretty clear that we're not as separate as our minds would have us feel. So what do I want to say at the very end of this? What I do with this is I take it seriously. I do it a bunch, and this is kind of a much more enhanced one as we've done before, some of us. I post this, and I look at it, and I say, what am I supposed to do to grow here? Okay. How can I open up these areas? What I want all these areas fully open. What steps do I need to take? And it gives me a prescription for what to do to become a more happy, healthy, fulfilled human being. So it's like you just took an MRI of your soul. And not to show the pathology, but to show the possibility. Okay, so questions or comments, and then we got a break. Okay. So, Abraham.
Yeah, if you have difficulties, or some difficulties of meeting your needs, some of your needs, can you jump into the spiritual part and be looking at things that are greater than you, looking at your intuition? It's going to be difficult for you to do so.
Okay, so he's saying if you can't meet some of your needs, can you just leap into the spiritual part? My quick answer is that's called dissociation. And that's not really a viable solution. I think that needs are needs. There are needs are needs for a reason. We have basic needs, and those basic needs are basic needs. If you can't get them satisfied, you got to get them satisfied. That there's no way to kind of leap. Many of us have tried to leap above our predicament. I think, as Jack Kornfield says, it's really hard to fly when you have chains on your feet. I think you basically got to get your needs met, and that allows you to grow. Otherwise, you can't really grow. Abraham.
If you have God, you may have something.
No, I think maybe not. Is anything else that... All right, I think we should break for the... I'm sorry, do you have a poem? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Go for it. Okay. Abraham, he always ends our terms with a poem. So, Abraham, a quick poem, and that'll be it for the term. If you have any questions about what just happened, either come up right now and see me or email me. Okay? But, I don't want to leave you hanging. So, if this brought up anything that you want to talk about, again, just come up right now or email me, and we'll set up a time where we can talk by phone.
Thank you.
mean, horizontal.
Like that?
Yeah, about
okay.
Even more.
All right. I asked my heart, what happened to love? Why this world lacks love? And the heart answers, it may have been a river of compassion, and it dried. It may have been a castle of kindness, and it collapsed. It may have been a history of a never-ending grief. And then I said, oh heart, please do not forget when you tempted me with sweet emotions that saved me like an extended hand through raging waves, saving the drowned. Let us drink upon its ruins, and as long as the tears keep flowing, and fly above its remains as a bird chanting his pain. Someday our tears may refill the river, our pain may rebuild the castle, and our future may be grief-free. Someday. Happy Thanksgiving.